মোহাম্মদ রসুল্লাহ বাই আবুল হাসান আলী নদভী। চ্যাপ্টার 26, ক্যারেক্টার অ্যান্ড ফিচার্স অফ দ্য প্রফেট, আ কম্প্রেহেন্সিভ অ্যান্ড গ্রেসফুল অ্যাকাউন্ট অফ দ্য নোবেল কোয়ালিটিস, দ্য মার্সিফুল ডিসপোজিশন অ্যান্ড দ্য ডিস্টিংটিভ ট্রেটস অফ দ্য প্রফেটস ক্যারেক্টার হ্যাজ বিন লেফট বিহাইন্ড বাই হিন্টস ইন দ্য ফলোয়িং বুক, ইন উইচ হি সেজ, কোট, বিং কেয়ার লেডেন উইথ অ্যাংজাইটি অফ দ্য হিয়ার আফটার, the prophet would remain engrossed in the thoughts of the hereafter continually for long spells and seem to be endlessly perturbed by it. Often he would remain long silent and never spoke needlessly. When he spoke, he enunciated each syllable distinctively, and thus he would also end his speech. Whatever he said, it was always explicit and in simple terms. His speech was never long-winded or unnecessarily concise. He was kind-hearted, was soft-spoken, he was never harsh or cool in his behavior. Neither he humiliated anyone or himself liked to be treated with disrespect. The Prophet set much of every provision, even if it was small in quantity, he never deprecated it. As for the edibles, he never disapproved, he never praised food also, nor he showed any anger about anything of this world or what it stands for. However, whenever one failed to meet one's obligations to God, nothing would cool down his indignation until he had paid back in full measure. But for the wrongs done to his own person, he would never get angry. When he pointed out something, he did so with his whole hand. When he was astonished, he turned his hand over. In speaking with another person, he would strike the palm of his left onto the thumb of his right. Angry, he would avert his face. Joyful, he would look downwards. His laughter was but a smile. When he laughed, his teeth used to appear as white as hailstones. Unquote. Ali was one of those who was nearest to the Prophet, a member of his family who had the opportunity of knowing everything about him, and he was also a keen observer of the manner and morals of men. In addition, Ali ibn Abu Talib had also the gift of describing a thing and a character in its vividness and intensity. He says the following about the Prophet. He was predisposed to refrain from unseemly languages, curses, and revilings, and deeds shameful. In no wise he said or did anything improper. He never raised his voice in a marketplace, nor returned evil for evil. Rather, he was given to forgive and to forget. Never in his life he laid his hands on anyone except in fight for the sake of God, nor did he ever strike anybody with his hand, neither a servant nor a woman. I never saw him exacting retribution for any offense or excesses, excepting when the honor of God was concerned or the limit set by God was transgressed, in which case the Prophet would be more enraged than in anybody else. If he had the choice between two courses, he always chose the easier one. When he came to his house, he behaved like a commoner, cleaned his garments, he milked the sheep, and he performed household chores. The Messenger of God was not given to idle talk. He spoke only when he was concerned and comforted the people instead of giving them a scare through his speech. If a man of rank or nobility called upon him from another tribe, he showed him due honor and appointed him to some respectable post. He always was as cautious in his dealings with the people as he was over careful in forming an estimate about them. Although he never denied anyone his courtesy and sweet temper, he kept his companions always posted with the events and happenings and used to ask them about their affairs. He commanded what was good and deprecated what was bad and evil. He strengthened the one and weakened the other. He was always moderate and steadfast without going back and forth. He never allowed anything to escape his attention, except others should become negligent or to get distracted. He took care to possess the means of meeting every contingency, and he was never found wanting in doing what was right and proper, but in no wise he ever exceeded the limits. Thus, those who kept his company were all virtuous and elect. He was the best in his estimation, who was the most benignant and courteous to all. He was the most esteemed in his eyes, who excelled others in benevolence and kindliness and doing favors to others. The prophet would stand up in the name of God on his lips, and so he sat down. Wherever he went, he sat down in the rear and instructed others to do the same. He paid such attention to everyone attending his meetings that everybody thought that none attracted his notice like himself. If anybody asked him to sit down or to spoke of his affairs, the prophet listened to him patiently and gave heed to him until he was finished and his talk was over and he departed. If anybody asked for something or wanted his help, he never allowed him to leave without disposing of his business, or at least he comforted him with kind words and sweet words. Such was his grace and kindliness to one and all that everybody took him as his father. In regards to what was right and proper, he regarded all on the same plane. His were the gatherings of knowledge and edification, of seemingness and modesty, of earnestness and probity. Neither anybody talked in a loud voice, nor censured others, nor cast a reflection on anybody, nor found fault with others. All were equal on level ground, and only those enjoyed a privilege who were most pious and the fearing of God. In his meetings, the elders were held in reverence. The youngsters were treated kindly. Those in need were given preference by all. The wayfarers and the strangers were afforded protection, and they were looked after. He was of cheerful disposition. The prophet of God was always bright and radiant. He was tender-hearted and sweet-tempered. He was not stern by nature. He never spoke harshly, nor was he accustomed to speaking loudly, nor to saying anything unseemly or lewd. Nor yet he found fault with others. He was not stingy or a miser. If he disliked the request made to him, he simply ignored it, and instead of refusing it outright, he gave no reply. From the three things he always kept aloof, one was squabble, the other arrogance, and the third was dabbling in useless tasks. And the three things he spared others were that he never spoke ill of anybody, or maligned anybody, or pried into anyone's failings. He gave tongue only to things which were decent. When he spoke, all those present listened to him attentively, lowering their heads as if birds were sitting on their heads. Others spoke only when the prophet had finished his talk. Nobody joined issues with others in his presence, and when anybody said something, others kept quiet until he finished his talk. The prophet of God used to smile on the remarks which made others laugh and express surprise over things which astonished others. He always gave head to wayfarers and used to put up patiently with their rudeness of the strangers until his companions diverted the attention of such people. He used to say, "Help those whom you find in need." He gave ears only to such tributes as were modestly worded, and never interrupted nor cut in talks of others. If anybody exceeded the limits, he either forbade him or cut short such prattle. He was the most generous, large-hearted, truthful, lenient, and amiable. One who saw him for the first time was overawed, but when you kept company with him and know him intimately, one becomes attached to him like an inseparable companion. Those who had seen him say that they never saw a man like him, either before or after him. May God have peace and blessings on his prophet. God had endowed his prophet with an impressive personality. His features displayed a harmonious blending of a lovely elegance and grace, sublime splendor and impressiveness, says Hind bin Abihala. He was self-respecting, graceful and splendid, pleasing to the eyes set on him. His face had a brilliance of a full moon, unquote. Bara bin Azib relates, quote, "God's messenger was of medium height. I had seen him once wearing a red robe and had never seen anyone more beautiful than he." Abu Huraira says, quote, "The prophet was of moderate size, a bit tall than short. His complexion was very fair. His beard was black, and his mouth was of moderate size and pretty. The eyelashes were long, the shoulders were broad. I have never seen a man like him either before or after him, unquote. Anas reports, quote, I have not touched any brocade or silk which was softer than the palm of the prophet's hand and smelt anything sweeter than the odor of the prophet, unquote. The love of God. The holy prophet was a messenger of God, the chosen and the exalted, whose all sins, foregoing and coming, had been forgiven by God. Yet he was the most painstaking, eager, and earnest in paying homage to God. Al-Mughira bin Shawbah reported that the prophet once got up at night and stood praying for such a long time that his feet became swollen. On being asked why did he have to do this when all of his former and latter sins have been forgiven, he replied, should I not be a grateful servant of God? Unquote. Aisha relates that the Prophet of God once kept awake throughout the night till morning, reciting only one verse. Repeating the same event, Abu Dharr says that the Prophet kept praying throughout the night, reciting one verse until the dawn appeared. The verse he recited was, if you punish them, they are your slaves, and if you forgive them, you only you are the mighty and wise, unquote. Aisha says, quote, the apostle of God took to fast to such an extent that we thought that he would never give it up, and when he would go without fasting, we thought that perhaps he would never fast again, unquote. Anas reports that whoever wanted to see the prophet praying at night could do so, and similarly, one could see him sleeping. Abdullah says that he went to see the prophet. He was then offering prayers and sobbing. The sound emitting from his chest was like that of a boiling pot. The prophet was never at ease except when he performed his prayers. It seemed that even after saying his prayers, he eagerly looked forward to a time when he would again be paying homage to God. The prophet often remarked, quote, the comfort of my eyes lies in prayers, unquote. The companions of the prophet relate that whenever he had any trouble, he used to prostrate in supplication to God. Whenever the wind blew at night, says Abu Darda, the prophet took shelter in the mosque until it became calm. And whenever there was a solar or lunar eclipse, the prophet got up in trepidation, seeking refuge from God until it was over and the sky was clear. The prophet always seemed solicitous to commune with God, uneasy and restless until he had again fallen prone before the Lord. Oftentimes he sent for Bilal and said, Bilal, make arrangements for holding prayers and put me at ease. Indifference to the world. Not the best words in their best order in any language can adequately depict the way the prophet looked at a dirham and a dinar, wealth and property and the world and all that it stands for. Indeed, when the disciples who had served their times at the feet of the prophet's companions or the disciples of such disciples never regarded fortune and treasures fit enough for the dust hole, their pure and pious lives, their indifference to wealth and worldly possession, the way they showered bounty on one and all and preferred others over their own selves, their contentness with the barest of minimum and their heroic selflessness and self-denial takes away one's breath. One can only picture to oneself the nobleness of heart and the open-handed generosity as well as the self-abrogation and unearthly disposition of the great teachers who have enlarged the minds of all the latter godly souls. We shall therefore cite only a few of those authentic reports that have been handed down by the most trustworthy narrators, since the Prophet's own words and actions can best illustrate his outlook and sentiments in this regard. Two of the well-known sayings of the Prophet which sum up his attitude towards the worldly life says, quote, O God, life is truly the life of the hereafter, and what have I to do with this world? My only business with it is like that of a rider who shades himself under a tree and then goes off and leaves it. Omar once saw the Prophet lying on a red mat which had left marks on his body. Omar began to cry at this frugal living and privation of his mentor. The Prophet asked, what's the matter, Omar? He replied, O Messenger of God, of all the creatures of God, You are the most venerated, but it is the Caesar and the Khusraw who are rolling in the lap of luxury. Umar's reply made the Prophet's blood boil in anger and his face became red. He said, Umar, have you any doubt about it? Then he added, these are the men who have given up, who have given all the pleasures of life in advance here in this world. The life of ease was rejected by the Prophet, not only for his own self, but also for his dependents as well. He was heard praying, O God, make the provisions of Muhammad's life sufficient, Muhammad's family sufficient only to sustain life. Abu Huraira says, by him in whose hand is Abu Huraira's life, the Prophet and his family never had wheat bread continuously for 3 days until he departed from this world. Aisha relates that we, the members of the Prophet's household, caught sight of one moon and then the next, but no fire was lighted in our houses. We had to live only on dates and water. The Prophet's coat of mail had been spawned with a Jew, but he did not have enough money to get it back from him. The Messenger of God departed from this world when the coat mail was still with the Jew. The Prophet proceeded to perform the farewell pilgrimage, followed by a huge crowd which obscured the horizon at a time when the entire Arabian Peninsula had acknowledged his spiritual supremacy. Yet the saddle of his dromedary was outworn, covered by a sheet which was worth no more than 4 dirhams. The prayer he then sent up to God was, O Allah, make it Hajj devoid of all pretension and show. Unquote. Abu Zar reports the Prophet telling him on occasion, I would haste to possess as much gold as Mount Uhud and then allow 3 days to pass with a single dinar remaining with me, except that I may hold back for the cause of the religion. Rather, I would give it all away to God's servants this way and on my right hand and left in the back. Jabir bin Abdullah says that it never happened that the Prophet of God was requested to give anything and he said no in reply. Ibn Abbas testifies that in generosity and bountifulness, the Prophet of God was swifter than the wings of wind. Anas says that once a man asked the Prophet to give him something, to give him a flock of sheep enough to fill the space between two hills. The man returned to his people and said to him, O you people, embrace Islam. Muhammad gives so open-heartedly as if he does not fear poverty. Another time, 90,000 dirhams was presented to the Prophet. He asked to heap them up on a mat and then started giving it away. Nobody who asked for it was denied until the entire heap of money disappeared. The Holy Prophet had an excessive zeal for devotion to God. His uninterrupted communion with God took the shape of extensive vigils, supplications, and lamentations, and his indifference to the world surpassed anyone else in the history of mankind. But he never wanting in sympathy and compassion, courteous and mannerly behavior to one and all, nor was he ever lacking in restoring justice to one who was denied or in bidding welcome to everyone according to his status and position. According to the want of human nature, these were perhaps the strongest unidentical traits blended together in the character of the Prophet. Once he said to Anas, quote, if you had known what I know, you would laugh little and weep a lot. The Prophet came to the noblest stock, came of the noblest lineage, yet he was very modest and exceedingly large-hearted and most sweet-tempered. He never kept aloof from his companions. He cherished a kind and tender disposition towards his children and often took them in his lap, accepted the invitation to take meals with the slaves and maidservants, the poor and the indigent. He visited the sick even if he had to go for the furthest corner of the city and always accepted the excuses offered for misdeeds. He was never seen stretching his legs while sitting with his companion except any one of them should feel inconvenience. Abdullah bin al-Haris reports that he had not seen anyone smiling so often and with such a cheerful disposition than the Prophet of God. Jabir bin Samura says that he had joined the sitting of the Prophet and his companions more than 100 times. He saw the companions listening and reciting poems describing incidents of the pagan past, while the prophet of God either sat silently or smiled at them for some amusing remarks. Sharad states that the prophet asked him to recite the verses of Umayyah bin Abi as-Salat, and he recited to the prophet. The prophet was extremely kind-hearted and affectionate. The finest human sentiment and virtues were discernible in his character. Anas bin Malik heard the prophet saying to Fatima, "Bring my two sons." In a moment, they came running and the prophet kissed and embraced them. Another time, the prophet summoned his grandson Hassan bin Ali. He came running and, falling into the prophet's lap, passed his fingers through his beard. The prophet opened his mouth while Hassan's saliva fell in his mouth. Fatima tells that the prophet's freedman, Zayd bin Haris, came to Medina. The prophet was in his house. Zayd knocked at his door. The prophet immediately got up to greet him, although he was not properly dressed. His mantle hanging loosely from his shoulder, he went out to receive Zayd, shook hands with him and kissed him. Osama bin Zayd reports that one of the prophet's daughters sent him a message telling him that a son of hers was at the ebb of life, asking him to come to her. The prophet sent greetings, saying at the same time, "What God has taken away belongs to him, and what he has given belongs to him, and he has appointed a time for everyone, so she ought to show endurance and seek her reward from God." She then sent for him, adjuring to come to her, and he got up to go, accompanied by us. The boy was at the last grasp, was brought to the prophet, who took him on his lap, his eyes overflowing with tears. Saad asked, "What is this, O messenger of God?" He replied, "This is the compassion which God deposits in the hearts of his servants, whom he wills. Verily, God shows compassion to those who are compassionate." When the prisoners taken in the battle of Badr, including Abbas, were tied up, the prophet could not sleep because of the groaning of Abbas. The Ansar, on coming to know of the prophet's uneasiness, untied him. The prophet was pleased with the Ansar, but when it was suggested to him that Abbas should be set free on payment of an indemnity, he refused the request, since he did not discriminate between Abbas and other prisoners. A Bedouin came to the prophet and said, "You kiss your children, but we do not." The prophet replied, "What can I do if God has withdrawn compassion from your hearts?" The prophet was extremely kind to the children and was always considerate and benevolent to them. Anas says that God's messenger passed by some children who were playing. The prophet greeted them. They also reports that the prophet used to mingle with us and ask my younger brother, Abu Umair, "What happened to your bird?" Being so solicitous and well disposed to Muslims, the messenger of God was very tolerant and overlooked the occasional weariness and boredom. Abdullah bin Mas'ud says that the prophet used to interpass his exhortations and counsels to the people, except they should not get tired with them. Although prayer was the most pleasing to him, he always used to cut it short if the cry of any child reached his ears. He said once, "When I stand up for prayers, I intend to make it long, but when I hear any child crying, I shorten it for the fear that his mother might be distressed." Abu Mas'ud narrates that someone said to the prophet, "Quote, O messenger of God, I swear by Allah that I keep away from the morning prayers on account of so-and-so who makes it too long." Ibn Mas'ud further says that he never saw the prophet more angry than he saw him while giving an exhortation about that incident. He said, "There are some amongst you who scare the people away. So whoever of you leads a prayer, he ought to be brief, for there are weak and aged and those who have business to attend." It is also related that Anjasha was a singer of camel songs who had a beautiful voice and used to lead camels of women. Anjasha's melodious singing made the camels go quickly, which disturbed the women. Hence the prophet said to him, "Gently, Anjasha, don't break the glass vessels." God had made the prophet's heart as clear as a crystal, bearing no ill will against anybody. Once he said to his companions, "None of you should denounce another before me, for I like to come out to you without any ill feeling." The prophet was benign and gracious to all the Muslims like a father. He treated every one of them like his family members, as if they were his own charge or the affection he had for them was like that of a mother for her children, for he had never had an eye to their wealth or property or their propensity, but he always deemed it to be his duty to lighten their burdens and to clear their debts. He used to say, whoever leaves some property as a legacy, it belongs to his heirs, but his unpaid debts are my responsibility. Yet there is yet another report citing the prophet, quote, no Muslim has a patron closer unto him than I, and if you wish, recite the verse, quote, the prophet is closer to the believers than themselves, for the property left by anyone goes to the nearest kins, whoever they may be. But if one dies leaving a debt, he, the creditor, should come to me, since I am the patron of the deceased and responsible for discharging his debts. Unquote. Moderation and seemliness. The cardinal virtues of the prophet, the niceness and seemliness of his character, which would remain a shining example of decorous behavior for coming generations, present as well as the future, consisted of his innate moderation, refined taste, gracefulness, restraint, temperateness, unexcessiveness, which was always keeping him on the right path. Aisha relates that the prophet was never given his choice between two things without taking the easier course, provided it involved no sin, for if it did, no one kept away further from it than him. The prophet disliked pretension and airiness no less than he detested asceticism, self-mortification, and renouncement of what was a just claim of one's body and soul. Abu Huraira reported that the prophet as saying, quote, the religion is facility, but if anyone overdoes it, it wears him down. So take to moderation and steer an even course. Approximate yourself to handiness and be cheering, and get strength through prayer in the morning and the evening and some of the parts of the darkly night. Unquote. The prophet also advised people, quote, exert only as much as you have the strength, for by God, Allah would never get tired, but you would grow tired. Ibn Abbas related that the prophet was asked about the religion most liked by God. He replied, the religion of ease and sincerity. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud reported the prophet as saying, quote, they are doomed who overdo or deal sternly or are given to hair splitting, unquote. The companion sent by the prophet for the education of, or the exhortation to, any tribe were commanded by him, quote, make it easy, not hard, gladden the hearts, don't scare them away, unquote. Abdullah ibn Amr ibn As tells that the prophet said, quote, God likes to see the marks of his bounty on his servant, unquote. The prophet in his own house. The prophet of God occupied himself at his house like a common man. As Aisha relates, he used to clean his clothes, milch the sheep, and do himself odd jobs. She also says that he used to mend his clothes, repair his shoes, and do similar small works. When asked how the prophet occupied himself at home, she replied, he used to keep himself busy in household chores and went out when the time for prayers came. And another report related on her authority, she is reported to have said, the prophet of God used to repair his own shoes, mend his clothes, occupy himself at home, even as any of you occupy yourselves. Aisha relates, the messenger of God was very soft-hearted and he was the kindest of all. He laughed often and smiled much. Anas bin Malik says that he had not seen a man who was more clement and nice to his household members than the prophet of God. It is related on the authority of Aisha that the prophet said, the best of you is the one who is the most nice to his wife and children, and I am the nicest amongst you. Abu Huraira said that the prophet never experienced disapproval of any food. If he desired, he ate it. If he disliked it, he left it alone. Unquote. Selflessness. It was a settled principle with the prophet that he always kept to the fore his own kith and kin and those who were nearer to him in facing a risk or a hazard, but allotted them the last place in distributing favors and rewards and spoils of war. When three well-known swordsmen of the Quraysh, Utsba bin Rabi'ah, Shaybah bin Rabi'ah, and Walid bin Utsba, challenged the Muslims to a single combat at Badr, the Prophet sent forward Hamza, Ali, and Ubaidah, although he knew that the valor of enemy combatants and also had a number of veterans amongst the Muhajirin and Ansar who could have successfully tilted and fought the Quraysh battlers. All of the three, Hamza, Ali, and Ubaidah, belonged to the Prophet's own clan, Banu Hashim, and were his nearest relatives. They were also dear by him, but the Prophet disliked to put in peril others for the sake of keeping his kindreds out of danger. God helped the three to emerge successful in the battle. Hamza and Ali came back safe and triumphant, while Ubaidah was brought back mortally wounded. Again, when the Prophet dissolved usury, that is interest, riba, and abolished blood vengeance belonging to the pre-Islamic period, on the occasion of the farewell Hajj, he declared, "The usury of the pre-Islamic days is abolished, and the first of our usury I abolish is that of Abbas bin Abu Muttalib." Abdul Muttalib, claims of blood vengeance belonging to the pagan past have been abolished, and the first of those murdered amongst whose blood vengeance I remit is that of the son of Rabia bin al-Harith. Unlike the kings, the rulers, and the political leaders, the Prophet of God always kept his kin, that is his relatives, in the background, giving preference to others and giving out gifts and rewards to people. Ali relates that Fatima had to work hard in grinding corn. So when she got news that some slave girls had been brought to the Prophet, she went to him and requested him for one to be given to her. The Prophet, however, did not accept her request. Fatima then mentioned the matter to Aisha, who talked to the Prophet about Fatima's trouble. Relating this incident, Ali says, "The Prophet visited us when we had gone to bed. We were about to get up, but he told us to stay where we were. He then sat down near me, and I felt the coldness of his feet on my chest. He then said, 'Let me guide you to something better than what you have asked me for. When you go to bed, say Subhanallah 33 times, Alhamdulillah 33 times, Allahu Akbar 34 times. This is better for you than a servant.'" Unquote. In another report of the incident, handed down through another source, the Prophet is reported to have said, quote, "By God, I cannot give you anything at a time when the bellies of my companions of Suffa have not been filled or have been hallowed by hunger. I have nothing to meet their expenses, and I will sell these to provide for them." Unquote. Instinctive sublimeness. Great was the responsibility lying on the Prophet. Publication of the God's truth in its purity, inviting the people to the path of truth and virtue, guarding and guiding the nascent Islamic community, and the cares and anxieties for the suffering humanity were the charges heavier than flesh and blood can bear. In between all of these worries, stresses, and strains, we find the most sublime instincts of grace and goodness, reflecting his worthiness and excellence of heart. In spite of his dauntless spirit of resolution, singleness of purpose, which was always the distinguishing feature of the prophets, the Prophet of God, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, could never forget those faithful friends and companions who had accepted his mission in its initial stages and made the supreme sacrifice of laying down their lives in the Battle of Uhud. He always used to talk about them, he invoked divine blessings for them, and had often paid a visit to them. Such was his mortal love, with an element of the transcendent in it, had it gone beyond the flesh and blood and penetrated the intimate hills and stones and ravines where these brilliant spectacles of noble love and sacrifice had been enacted. His companions relate that they heard him saying, quote, "This is the hill that loves me and I love it," talking about Uhud, the hill of Uhud. Anas ibn Malik says that when the Prophet of God caught sight of Uhud, he said, "This is the hill that loves me and I love it." Abu Hamaitz reports that he accompanied the Prophet while returning from Tabuk. When they came near Medina, the Prophet said, "This is Taba, and this is the hill which loves me and I love it." Uqba tells that the Prophet went to the martyrs of Uhud and prayed for their salvation. Jabir bin Abdullah relates that when the martyrs of Uhud were once mentioned to the Prophet, he said, "I swear to God that I would have liked to be sleeping with these martyrs by the side of the hill. The Prophet had borne the equanimity, the shock of Hamza's death, who had been his loving uncle as well as his foster brother, and had parted with his life fighting valiantly for the cause of Islam. He also remained calm and composed on what had been done with Hamza's dead body. But when he passed by the house of Bani Abdul Ashal, while returning to Medina, he heard the lamentation over the dead. Overcome with grief for the departed comrades, his eyes gave way to tears and he said, "But there is no woman to mourn over Hamza." But these instincts, emotions, however noble and sublime and overflowing with milk of human kindness, were never allowed by the Prophet to entrammel his mission or to disrupt the divine injunctions. Historians and biographers of the Prophet relate that when Sa'd bin Mu'az and Usayyid bin Hudayr came back to the settlement of Banu Abdul Ashal, they ordered their women to get rid of themselves and go and weep for Hamza. They did as they had been told, and when the Prophet came to find out that they were weeping at the door of the mosque, he told them, "May God have mercy on you. Go back. Your presence has been enough for my consolation." It has been narrated by another companion that on seeing the woman, the Prophet asked, "What is it?" When he was told that the Ansar had sent their women to weep over Hamza, he invoked God's mercy for the Ansar and paid compliments to them for their love towards the Prophet, but also added, "I did not mean that. I did not like lamentation of the dead." Thereafter, the Prophet forbade mourning for the dead beyond 3 days. An occasion still more poignant was when Wahshi, the slayer of Hamza, called upon the Messenger of God. The conquest of Makkah by the Muslims was deemed by the enemies of Islam as the darkest hour of their lives. A number of them had no hesitation in reaching the decision that it would have been impossible for them to remain at Makkah. They decided to migrate to Syria, Yemen, or other places for the fear of their lives. Their friends, however, told them, "Woe unto you, Muhammad's peace be upon him doesn't kill anyone who enters his religion." Almost all these former enemies returned and embraced Islam. None of them had the least speck of fear in his heart on appearing before the Prophet after pledging allegiance to Islam, nor did the Prophet say a word to cast any doubt on the sincerity of his heart or to terrify them. So it happened with Wahshi as well, the person who killed Hamza. The Prophet of God learned from Wahshi, after he had accepted Islam, how he killed Hamza. It was but natural that the Prophet grieved and harrowed to know about the ghastly crime of Wahshi, but he did not allow his irritation to get the better of his responsibility as the Prophet of God. He neither refused to admit Wahshi to the folds of Islam, nor did he kill him for his crime. All he said to Wahshi was, "O man, hide your face from me and never let me see you again." Wahshi used to avoid the Prophet so that he should not see him until the time arrived for the Prophet's departure. These nobler emotions or tender feelings, reflecting warm-heartedness of the Prophet, were laid bare when he visited an old, dilapidated grave. Then those with him found him in turmoil, and he said, "This is the grave of Amina." This was long, long years after the death of the Prophet's mother. Mildness, courtesy, and forbearance. In his good manners, gentleness, cordiality, sympathy, and forbearance, the Messenger of God had left a perpetual and living example of noble behavior for the entire of humanity. To tell the truth, he stood on such an exalted plane of graceful and polite deportment that God had paid him a glowing compliment in the Quran. Quote, "And verily, you are of high and noble disposition." Unquote. The Prophet once told the companions, "God has himself disciplined me and disciplined in the best manner." Jabir reported that the Prophet as saying, "God has raised me for the completion of moral virtues and seemly behavior." When Aisha was questioned about the character of the Prophet, she replied, "Quran was his character." Unquote. Indeed, such were his tolerance, forbearance, sympathy, graciousness, and large-heartedness that even the painters of souls with gift of speech would seldom find words inadequate to catch his likeness. had the accounts about him not been handed down with the greatest caution by the most trustworthy narrators, it would have been difficult for one to accept them. But all these accounts have been transmitted with the greatest care by the very narrators, each testifying the piety, veracity, acumen, and intelligence of the others from whom he learnt of an event, and then the reports transmitted through the different sources and channels so corroborate one another that in their genuineness and authenticity they form a class by themselves in the entire continuous methodical records of public events. There is thus not the least doubt about every unbiased student of these records will come to the conclusion that never had there existed a historical document which was more firmly based on facts or better authenticated by external and internal evidence than the traditions of the Prophet, which represent the climax of the science of history. A few incidents given here illustrate the Prophet's tenderness and mercy towards the people. Clemency of the merciful Prophet of God had no distinction between friends or foe. Abdullah bin Ubay was the leader of the hypocrites, whose revengeful attitude had always created difficulties for the Prophet. But when he died, and he had been placed in his grave, the Prophet arrived and asked him to be taken out. He then placed him on his knees, blew some of his saliva over him, and clothed him with his own shirt. Anas reports, "Once I was walking with the Prophet, who was wearing a Najrani cloak with coarse fringe. A nomadic Arab met him and gave his cloth a violent tug. I saw that the man's tug had left a mark on the neck of the Prophet of God. The nomad said, 'Command that I be given some of God's property you have, Muhammad.' The Prophet turned around to him and laughed, and then ordered that he should be given something. Zayd bin Sana'a came to the Prophet and demanded payment of the money owed by the Prophet. Then he violently pulled the Prophet's cloak from his shoulder, caught hold of it, and addressed him rudely, saying, 'You son of Abdul Muttalib are dilly-dallying.' Omar rebuked and reproached him, but the Prophet kept smiling and said to Omar, 'This man was entitled to a better treatment from you. You ought to have advised me to repay the loan promptly and asked him to make his demand politely.' Then turning towards Zayd, the Prophet said, 'There are still 3 days to go for the appointed time for the repayment.' At the same time, he asked Omar to repay the loan and give Zayd 20 sa'as more so as to compensate him for the threatening attitude towards Zayd. The gracious and obliging behavior of the Prophet of God caused Zayd to accept Islam." Anas relates that once a band of 80 armed men came to Makkah, suddenly appeared at Wadi Taimin with the intention of making a sudden attack on the Prophet of God. They were all held captives, but the Prophet spared their lives. Relating an incident when Jabir went to the Prophet for an expedition, he says, "At midday, the time for a siesta came during the journey. The valley was full of thorny bushes. The Prophet went to take rest under an akia tree on which he hung his sword. We also dispersed to take a break under different trees. All of a sudden, the Prophet called us, and we saw that a nomadic Arab was sitting by his side. When we went to him, he said, 'I was sleeping when this man came and unsheathed my sword against me. When I woke up, I saw him standing over my head with a drawn sword, and he was asking, "Who can protect you from me?" I replied, "Allah," and his sword fell. Then he sat down, and now he is before you." It is related that the Prophet did not exact any revenge from this nomadic Arab. Every companion of the Prophet was sufficiently forbearing to throw the most godly soul into shade, but the longest-suffering patience of Allah's Messenger rose above the patience of all of them. He was their kind-hearted teacher and mentor and guide, from whom all drew inspiration. An incident related by Abu Huraira illustrates the breadth and bigness of the Prophet's heart. Once a Bedouin passed urine in the holy mosque, the companions jumped at him and grabbed him for the sacrilegious act, but the Prophet commanded, "Let him alone. Pour a bucket of water or two over what he had passed, for you have seen to make things easy and not to make things difficult." Another companion, Muawiyah, relates that, "I sneezed while praying along with the Prophet of God and said, God have mercy on you. The people around stared down at me, so I said, woe is me. What do you mean by looking askance at me? They began to strike their hands on their thighs. Now I understood that they wanted me silent and to be quiet. And the prophet finished his prayers, for whom I would give my father and mother as ransom, as no other teacher better than him I have seen before or after. For by God, he neither rebuked me nor reviled me. He simply said to not talk during prayers, for it consists only of the glorification of God, the declaration of his greatness, and recitation of the Quran. Anas also has related many an instances of the Prophet's leniency, sympathy, noble-mindedness. He says that Allah's Prophet was too generous and kind. If anybody in need approached him for anything, he gave it to him, or at least made a promise for the same. Once the Prophet had taken his place to lead the prayer, a desert Arab stepped forward and, holding his clock, said, I stand in need, but I fear I should forget it. The Prophet went with him and prayed after he had satisfied him. Speaking of the indulgent and long-suffering nature of the Prophet, Anas has cited certain instances of the time when he was a young boy. He says, I served the Prophet for 10 years, but he never blamed me for doing or not doing anything. Suad bin Omar called upon the Prophet when, as he says, in his own cloak, bore some marks of a scent mixed with saffron. The Prophet exclaimed, saffron, saffron, lay off, and hit me with a stick on my stomach, which caused me a little pain. Saud said, O Prophet of God, now I have the right to make requital. The Prophet at once bared his belly and said, have your revenge. Modesty. The Prophet was absolutely unamusing and modest, unassuming and modest. He hated to put on airs or to make himself conspicuous of any occasion. He did not even like the people to stand up to show him respect, or he allowed anybody to extol him in a way the followers of the religion have praised their prophets before. He was the messenger and servant of God, and he wanted himself to be known to others in that manner, neither more nor less. Anas said that no man was dearer to the companions than Allah's messenger, but they never stood up on seeing him, for they knew he disliked that. Once the Prophet was addressed as the best of creations. He promptly replied that was a position enjoyed by Ibrahim, alayhi salam. Omar reported that the Prophet is saying, do not exalt me as the Christians have exalted Jesus, the son of Mary. I am just Allah's servant, so call me Allah's servant and messenger. Abdullah bin Abu Awfa reports the Prophet of God never disdained to go with a slave or a widow to accomplish their tasks. Anas said that any slave girl or maid servant of Medina could hold the Prophet by hand and say whatever she liked and take him to a place that she desired. When Adi bin Hatim came to see the Prophet, he called him inside his house. A maid servant brought a cushion to rest on, but the Prophet placed it between him and Adi and sat down on the floor. Adi later said that he had then immediately realized that the Prophet was not a king. Anas reported that the Prophet of God used to visit the sick, attend funerals, ride on a donkey, and accept the slave's invitation for a meal. Jabir states that the Prophet used to slow down his pace for the sake of the weak and also prayed for them. Anas said the Prophet accepted an invitation even if he was presented a barley bread and a soup whose taste had changed. He also reports that the Prophet is saying, I am God's servant, I eat like a servant, and I sit like a servant. Abdullah bin Amr bin As says, quote, once when the Messenger of God came to my house, I gave him a cushion filled with bark, but he sat down on the floor, placing the cushion between me and him. The Prophet used to tidy up his house, tether the camels, feed the animals, take food with his servants, and help them in kneading flour and bringing provisions from the market. The courage and shyness are often regarded as conflicting traits, but the two poised the Prophet's character in a like manner. Being extremely modest, he blushed like a maiden, as stated by Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, if he came across anything shocking or outrageous. On such occasions, his countenance changed, showing his displeasure. Such was his coyness that he even diffident to express anything disagreeable to one's face and usually ask somebody else to do the job for him. Anas reports that the clothes of a man present in one of his sittings were hued in yellowish color. Since the Prophet did not like to say anything displeasing to anyone, he said to others, "When a man has got up to leave, I would have been better if you would have told him to give up using yellow color." Aisha relates that if the Prophet came to know of a misdeed committed by anybody, he would never ask him why he had done it. He would just say on an occasion, "What has happened to the people to that say or do such a thing?" He deprecated the wrong, but he never named the wrongdoer. As for the dauntless courage and valor of the Prophet of God, the testimony of Ali, the Lion of God, is plenty good enough to illustrate the point. He says, quote, "When the battle used to become fierce and the eyes seemed to be coming out of the sockets, we were wont to look for the Prophet in order to find refuge in him. Then we found none closing up with the enemy as the Prophet. This is what happened in Badr. If we were taking shelter behind the Prophet, who was then going at the enemy more closely than anyone else." Anas said, "The Prophet of God was extremely handsome, most genuine, the bravest of men. One night, when the people of Medina had been in a panic and some went in the direction of the sound they had heard, they were met by the Prophet, who had gone in that direction ahead of them and was saying, 'Don't fear, don't fear.' He was then on the bare-backed horse without a saddle, belonging to Abu Talha, and had a sword slung on his neck. Praising the horse, he said, 'I have found it swift and rushing ahead like an ocean.' In the battle of Uhud and Hunain, when the Muslims had fallen back and the bravest amongst them were unable to stand the charge of the enemy, the Prophet of God had stuck to his position, riding his mule as if nothing had happened, and was calling out, 'I am the Prophet without falsehood. I am the son of Abdul Muttalib.'" Unquote. Mercy and compassion. The Prophet of God was the kindliest of men, just as he excelled all others in courage and valor. Being extremely kind-hearted, his eyes brimmed with tears at the slightest sign of inhumanity. Shaddad bin Aus reports the Prophet as saying, "God has commanded you to show kindness to everyone, so if you have to kill, kill nicely, and if you have to slaughter an animal, slaughter it gently. If any one of you has to slay an animal, he should sharpen the blade first and treat the animal well." Ibn Abbas relates that a man threw a goat on its side and then started sharpening his knife. When the Prophet saw him and said, "Do you want to kill it twice? Why do you not sharpen your knife before throwing it on the ground?" The Prophet forbade his companions to keep creatures like goats or cows or camels hungry or thirsty, or to disturb or to overburden them. He commanded that kindliness and putting them at ease were meritorious acts tending to bring man nearer to God. Abu Huraira reports that the Prophet is saying, "A traveler who was thirsty saw a well in the way. He got inside the well, and when he came out, he saw a dog licking the mud because of its thirst. The man bethought himself that the dog should be as thirsty as he was, and so he got into the well again, filled his socks, which were made of leather, with water, and carried it, holding off with his teeth. When thus he quenched the thirst of the dog, God was pleased with this act of kindness and pardoned all of his sins." The companions asked for messenger of God, "Is there recompense in the matter of beasts and wild animals also?" The Prophet replies, "There is recompense in regards to every creature that has a living heart." Abdullah bin Omar told that the Prophet said, quote, "A woman was cast away into hell only because she had denied food and water to her cat and refused to set it free so that the cat may satisfy its hunger by taking worms or insects." Unquote. Suhail bin Amr states that the Prophet of God came across a camel so famished that its belly had shrunk to its back. He said, "Fear God in the matter of these dumb creatures. If you ride them when they are hungry, and if you eat them when they are in a good condition." Abdullah bin Jafar narrated the incident that once the Prophet entered the enclosure of an Ansar, where there was a camel which started groaning on catching the sight of the Prophet, tears running down its eyes. The Prophet went near it and patted it on its hump and face, which set it at ease. Then the Prophet asked who its owner was. The Ansari young man came and said, O Messenger of God, it belongs to me. The Prophet said, Do you not fear God in the matter of this beast, although he has made you its owner? It complained to me that you bore hard upon it and always kept it at work. Abu Huraira quoted the Prophet as saying, quote, When you travel in a fertile country, do not deny the camels their due from the ground. And when you travel in a land barren and dry, cover it with speed. When you encamp at night, keep away from the roads, for they are where the beasts pass and are the resorts of the night of the insects at night. Unquote. Ibn Mas'ud reports, quote, While we were on a journey with the Messenger of God, he went a short distance from where we had encamped. There we saw a small bird with two of its birdlings and caught them. The bird was fluttering when the Prophet came back, and so he asked, Who has distressed it by taking its chicks? Then he asked us to return the chicks. There were also an anthill, and it burnt it out. When the Prophet saw it, he asked, Who has burnt it? When we informed it that we had done it, he said, Only the Lord of Fire has the right to punish with fire. The Prophet strongly enjoined the duty of kind and generous treatment to the slaves, servants, and the labor engaged for manual work. Jabir relates that the Prophet of God is saying, Feed them with the food which you eat, clothe them with such clothing as you wear, and do not cause trouble to God's creatures. The Prophet is further stated to have said, Those whom Allah has made your dependents are your brothers, servants, and helpmates. Anybody whose brother has been subservient to him ought to feed him with food he eats and clothe him with the clothes he wears. Command him not to do which he is not able to do, and if it is necessary to do so, then he should help him in doing this job. Abdullah bin Omar says that once a nomadic Arab came and asked the Prophet, quote, How many times should I pardon my servant in a day? The Prophet replied, 70 times. He also quotes the Prophet as saying, Pay the wages of laborers before his sweat dries up. Unquote. A comprehensive and eternal model, the Messenger of God was the last and the greatest of all prophets, sent to provide guidance to all classes, ranks, grades, in every age, time, and country. The comprehensiveness of the character of the Prophet, summed up graphically by Sayyid Suleiman Nadwi in Muhammad the Ideal Prophet, would be befitting epilogue to this section dealing with the character of the Prophet. Sayyid Suleiman Nadwi writes, quote, A model which can serve for every class of the people acting under different circumstances and states of human emotion will be found in the life of the Prophet. If you are rich, there are example of tradesmen of Makkah and the master of the Bahrain's treasure. If you are poor, you can follow that of Ali Talib and the immigrants of Medina. If you are a king, watch the actions of the ruler of Arabia. And if you are a vassal, take a look at the man enduring hardships imposed by the Quraysh of Makkah. If you are a conqueror, lay your eyes on the victor of Badr and Hunayn. If you have suffered a defeat, take a lesson from the one discomforted by Uhud. If you are a teacher, learn from the holy mentor of the school of Suffa. If you are a student, look at the learner who sat before Jibrail. If you are a sermoner, direct your eyes to the discourses delivering lectures in the mosque of Medina. If you are charged to preach the gospel of truth and mercy to your persecutors, observe the helpless preachers explaining the message of God to the pagans of Makkah. If you have brought your enemy to his knees, look at the conqueror of Makkah. If you want to administer your lands and properties, discover how the lands and groves of Bani Nadir, Khaybar, and Fadak were managed. If you are an orphan, do not forget the child of Amina and Abdullah, left to the tender mercy of Halima. If you are young, see the character of Makkah's shepherd. If you are traveling business, cast a glance at the leader of the caravan underway to Basra. If you are a judge or an arbitrator, look at the umpire entering the holy sanctuary before the peep of dawn and installing Hajri Aswad in the Kaaba, or a justice of peace in whose eyes the poor and the rich were the same. If you are a husband, study the behavior of the husband of Khadija and Aisha. If you are a father, go through the biography of Fatima's father and the grandfather of Hassan and Hussein. In short, whoever and whatever you may be, you will find a shining example in the life of the Prophet to illuminate your behavior. If you have the life of the Prophet before you, you can find the examples of all the Prophets, Noah, Ibrahim, John, Jonah, Moses, Jesus, and all others. If the life and character of each Prophet of God were deemed to be a shop selling the wares of one commodity, that of Muhammad, peace be upon him, would verily be a variety store whose goods of every description can have had to suit the taste and needs of all of them. Jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.